enter the home of the director of LULAC and gave them liberty to search every nook and cranny in that house for information, which the warrant specified, once again, information to establish that LULAC is involved in the practice of gathering signatures from persons who are not eligible to vote. End result is that it's still pending. I mean, it's harassment at this point, I think. This is simply a practice of the Texas Republican Party and the Attorney General of Texas to establish an environment of threat and coercion so as to prevent Democratic voters, and Mexican-Americans are, by and large, Democratic voters, from going to vote. It's part of the Republican strategy is to limit the voting, especially towards groups and classes that the Republicans know are largely Democratic, such as Mexican-Americans, African-Americans. So these groups are targeted. It's an old ploy. The Republicans know they don't have the votes. They've lost every election, presidential election, in this millennium.
On that note, Bill Maestas, thank you for joining us on Politics or Pedagogy.
Thank you very much.
This is John Crumshaw with a special Politics or Pedagogy Education Report. Please make your contribution at 818-985-5735 or pledge online at kpfk.org.
90.7 KPFK, Los Angeles.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Esty Chandler. Students are back on campus, as are Palestine solidarity demonstrations, protesting the ongoing U.S.-supported Israeli genocide on Palestinians in Gaza. University administrators undoubtedly spent much of their summer breaks planning for the resumption of protests when classes resumed, with many campuses imposing new policies intending to further suppress campus activism, the First Amendment be damned. The University of California and California State University systems have imposed a zero-tolerance policy against camping, obscuring faces with masks, and blocking pathways, among other things. The University of Pennsylvania has temporarily banned demonstrations in classrooms, offices, residences, and many other public areas on campus. Columbia University has limited access, requiring students to show identification to enter campus grounds, and has erected a fence and hired private security to guard the quad that protesters occupied in May. And last month, in what Palestine Legal is calling a dangerous escalation of repression, New York University announced new student conduct policies, which seem to prohibit criticism of Zionism, which is a political ideology. As Palestine Legal points out, the new policies risk creating a hostile environment for Palestinian and anti-Zionist Jewish students and severely curtailing the free expression of all students. The immediate impact and intention of the policies, like most of the repressive actions taken by campus administrations in reaction to student uprisings, encampments, resolutions, and divestment demands over the past year, will be to chill dissent on campus related to Gaza, Israel, and Palestine. New York University Faculty for Justice in Palestine responded to the policy announcement by saying, among other things, that it represents an intensification of NYU's year-long effort to censor pro-Palestine activism and opens the door for other ethno-nationalist ideologies to claim protection from criticism. NYU's stated educational mission to be a top-quality international center for scholarship requires space for students to think and speak freely. And our constitutional right to free speech is among the topics we will discuss today with our guest, Stephen Rohde. Stephen Rohde is a constitutional scholar, writer, lecturer, and political activist who practiced civil rights law for nearly 50 years. He's a past chair of the ACLU Foundation of Southern California and past national chair of Bend the Arc, a Jewish partnership for justice. He's a founder and the current chair of Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace and a member of the Black Jewish Justice Alliance. Stephen Rohde is the author of two books, American Words of Freedom, The Words That Define Our Nation, and Freedom of Assembly. And he's the co-author of Foundations of Freedom, published by the Constitutional Rights Foundation. I am very happy to welcome Stephen Rohde to Middle East in Focus.
Thank you very much, Esty. It is always a pleasure to discuss important issues with you.
Fantastic. Your sound is a little bit choppy. You might want to turn off your video to get to help with the bandwidth. We want to be able to hear you clearly. Steve, critics, including the American Association of University Professors, which represents more than 44,000 faculty members nationwide, say that the new policies I touched on in the opening and many others discourage or shut down freedom of expression in order to appease politicians who called for a crackdown, putting campuses once again at the center of bitter free speech debates. Do you agree with the AAUP that those who care about higher education and democracy, should be alarmed about these new repressive policies?
I think everybody should be alarmed about what's going on in our college campuses in particular, as well as across the country. We're in a dangerous intersection between serious confusion over free speech, its scope and its limitations, and then the overwhelming campus protests focused on the extermination of Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank. Consequently, we have squandered this summer, which could have been a time of clarification following up on last semester's protests and the repression of free speech on campus then. And of course, we also had those incidents when college presidents, beginning last December, also squandered an opportunity to clarify the real meaning of what it means to have free speech on our college campuses. The American Association of University Professors is absolutely right. You would expect the most robust, wide open discussion of serious political issues on our college campuses. And sadly, both legislatures and college administrators are going in the opposite direction and imposing very serious and in some cases confusing and draconian.
Your sound has dropped out, Steve.
I gave my full answer. I hope you
you're back,
heard most of it.
You're back now. We heard most of it. Let's hope your sound holds up. Students across several Bay Area universities recently kicked off the fall semester with coordinated pro-Palestine rallies that adhered to the zero tolerance regulations that University of California and Cal State University systems have vowed to strictly enforce. While California State Senator Steve Glaser authored Senate Bill 1287, which was supported by the California Legislative Jewish Caucus. We're the only state that has a Jewish caucus. And that Senate bill has now passed in both houses of the California legislature and is only awaiting Governor Newsom's signature to become law. Opponents of the bill argue that it requires students to waive their constitutional rights and that it will likewise impose a chilling effect on protected speech. Steve, can you comment on Senate Bill 1287 and its constitutionality?
Yes, SB 1287 is an example of what I described at the beginning in terms of what is most concerning. This was a bill, it had a handful of initial sponsors, and the Jewish caucus was heavy among them, but it had opposition from the ACLU, my own group, Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace, and several other organizations. It started out suggesting that any accusations of genocide would be prohibited from free speech. That was clearly targeted at findings such as the International Court of Justice, which found plausible evidence of genocide in terms of what Israel was committing in Gaza. The bill has begun to be watered down, but today it poses a serious threat by using vague terms that speech that creates a hostile environment, speech that is intimidating, or even speech that is discriminatory. The problem is, at its face value, and we'll get into this with some of the campus rules later, terms like those, well, we don't want discrimination on college campuses. But the problem is when you come to free speech, is the speech that is critical of Israel, does that constitute discriminatory speech on the basis of religion? And that's because largely for the last few years, criticism of Israel has been conflated with anti-Semitism. I think we'll expand on that in a few minutes. Hostile environment. You know, on a college campus, facing up to issues that are difficult, facing up to issues that are controversial or even offensive, may cause students to be upset. It may cause students to be concerned or even feel some hostility. But in the name of protecting people from hostility, we cannot suppress free speech. So the problem with the bill is that it allows vague laws to be set up, and we can only know that in the hands of college administrators from past experience, they will exploit vague laws to suppress the speech they don't like or which they're being pressured by trustees and donors and others into suppressing. That's my deep concern about SB 1287.
You're listening to Middle East in Focus on listener-supported KPFK. I'm Esti Chandler, very grateful to be joined today by a friend with decades of experience in civil rights law, including as past chair of the ACLU Foundation of Southern California, Stephen Rohde, about a plethora of new policies, rules, and guidelines instituted on college and university campuses across the nation, intending to further suppress campus activism opposing the U.S.-supported Israeli genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. Steve, while we're dealing with California, I want to ask you about another situation where a judge handed down a preliminary injunction recently in a case brought against UCLA by plaintiff Yitzhak Frankel et al. That argued that Jews were kept out of the UCLA Gaza Solidarity encampment last spring because they are Jewish, therefore violating their rights. Can you briefly discuss that preliminary injunction and the facts that it blatantly ignores?
So this case is a perfect example of what he alerted us to earlier in this program. A group of Jewish students alleged that their First Amendment rights to free exercise of religion was violated because UCLA failed to protect them after pro-Palestinian protesters established an encampment on the UCLA campus. The problem with the result so far, it's a preliminary injunction only, is there was no one in court giving voice to the pro-Palestinian side of the argument. UCLA was the defendant. UCLA's lawyer argued technical legal defenses, but they never went to the heart of the case, which is that there was no discrimination on the basis of religion in the solidarity encampment. Jews actually helped organize the encampment. Jews were on site in the encampment. If not now, Jewish Voice for Peace, they were in the encampment. No Jew was excluded because of them being Jewish. The lawsuit never explored that issue. It was left to an amicus, friend of the court brief, by Faculty for Justice in Palestine to try to make that case. And they pointed out repeatedly that the issue of entrance into the encampment was a security matter. The pro-Palestinian protester had felt threatened, and rightly so, because on the last day of April, they were attacked by pro-Israel protesters and counter-protesters. They only wanted people within the encampment who were in solidarity with the Palestinian movement. And students have a right to form clubs and activities based on their political viewpoints. This lawsuit will work its way through the courts. I'm hopeful the appellate courts will take a harder look at the facts, and it will actually be an opportunity to demonstrate that mere criticism of Israel and organizing around pro-Palestinian voices is not religious discrimination against Jews.
That's right. And I will add that, in fact, every single night of the encampment, there were pro-Israel troublemakers who showed up trying to break in, injure people. There was a backpack full of mice that was thrown over the wall so that they could get loose in the encampment. They, as you stated, they had good rights to be concerned about their safety. Steve, as Palestine Legal Statement on NYU's new code of conduct policy points out, the policy directly conflates, as you alluded to earlier, Zionism and Judaism by stating that the former is a code word for the latter, as well as treating Zionism as a protected class on its own, a status afforded to no other political ideology. What's your reaction to a policy claiming that Zionist is an identity meriting protection under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, rather than, as Palestine Legal frames it, a, quote, political ideology used to justify apartheid and genocide, end quote?
This is now the next round in this battle to try, from my standpoint, to distinguish political criticism of Israel and political criticism of ideologies from anti-Semitism and now from Zionism. People really need a full-dress graduate course in Zionism. They need to understand that it was an ethno-nationalist ideology developed in the 19th century. There were many Jews, Hannah Arendt, Albert Einstein for a period of time, who were worried about Zionism. They were worried about Jews forming a theocracy with all of the dangers that a theocracy brings. And so now, coming into the 20th century and the founding of Israel, which now proudly calls itself a Jewish state, it has taken on all of the powers and instruments of a national government. Anyone is free to criticize Israel. Anyone is free to criticize Zionism. And to label the critic of Zionism as an anti-Semite in an attempt to silence them, and here in an attempt to state a grounds for student discipline at NYU, which could lead to suspension or expulsion. This is what is dangerous about what is going on today. And unfortunately, you do not hear in the corporate mainstream media any serious analysis. People are parroting phrases like anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. It's what's dangerous about the American dialogue that's currently going on. Now, fortunately, there are forces like Palestine Legal, the ACLU, and other organizations that are going to challenge these laws, and the courts are going to have a chance quietly and thoughtfully to parse them. But in the meantime, students are being threatened, faculty are being threatened, in some cases suspended and terminated. Student clubs are being banned from campus in the midst of this, what I think is hysteria. And what it's led to is the dilution of the true form of virulent Jew-hating that is anti-Semitism. Nothing I've said today or any of these groups and legal positions suggests there is no anti-Semitism. We know there is, and it needs to be rooted out and dismantled. But this is the opposite, because once you expand the definition of anti-Semitism to sweep in anti-Zionism or anti-Israel ideological debates, you dilute the evil of anti-Semitism. You push people away from fighting anti-Semitism. I'm deeply concerned about that in today's current debate.
You and me both. Last month, a federal judge in Massachusetts cleared the way forward for a lawsuit brought by Jewish students alleging that Harvard University had failed to protect them from harassment as fellow students chanted, "From the river to the sea," a popular slogan for over decades that has been chanted in support of Palestinian liberation, which supporters of Israel now claim, quite ironically, has genocidal connotations. We're clearly seeing a tsunami of Zionist McCarthyism from coast to coast. With your decades of legal hindsight, Steve, what do you suggest is the best path forward for justice advocates to take to effectively fight against Zionist McCarthyism?
Here's just another example of ignorance that is being perpetuated and spread throughout this debate. Let me read a political statement. Between the sea and the Jordan, there will only be Israeli sovereignty. That is the founding charter of Benjamin Netanyahu's Likud party. That is one of the origins of this kind of statement. Now, it's been picked up and used elsewhere because the competing parties in that field see a stake in that geography. And so they speak of from the river to the sea. In American law, no phrase should be banned. No phrase should be demonized and lead to punishment and discipline. A Palestinian-American writer, Youssef Mounier, spoke of Palestine can live in their homeland as free and equal citizens, neither dominated by others nor dominating them. That is a key definition. Now, there could be many definitions of from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. The fact that there can be a variety of definitions and sources makes that term fully open to debate on our college campuses and, frankly, in our public discourse in general. You cannot take one phrase out of a political debate, label the speakers who use it as anti-Semites, and thus try to silence them and exclude them from the national debate. That is simply a tactic. It has been used by governments and censors since time in memoriam. We cannot allow language to be banned, because once, as George Orwell taught us, once you ban phrases and terms and language, you are leading to the control of thoughts and eventually an authoritarian regime. I'm deeply concerned as we move forward. In response specifically to your question, I think we have to provide safe haven for free speech. As alumni, I'm an alumnus of Northwestern University, which has passed another draconian bill, and of Columbia Law School. I'm already active as an alumni in both of those institutions, in contacting the authorities, in speaking up from the viewpoint I'm expressing today. I think all of your listeners who graduated from any college or university, anyone who cares about our educational system, should be contacting these universities here where you speak from in Los Angeles, in terms of UCLA and SC and other campuses. We have to organize politically. We have to demonstrate against this kind of repression. We have to elect political leaders who understand the need for free speech and free expression. And we have to organize within our own families and our own community groups and organizations. This is a robust time when we have to speak up, because this kind of repression spreads. It causes, it tends to metastasize, to suppress other speech, and it can gather steam. The Republicans in Congress who pilloried the university professors, they're no friends of Jews. They're no friends of Palestinians. They have a political agenda which they are trying to advance, and then they will wrap themselves in any cause that they think is true.
We can't thank you enough. Sorry, Steve, we are out of time. Can't thank you enough for taking the time to spend with us to parse these important issues. New York University's faculty and staff for Justice in Palestine see NYU's new non-discrimination and anti-harassment guidance policies as a predictable intensification of NYU's efforts this year to censor criticism and criminalize protest of Israel's ongoing genocide in Gaza, and an outcome of the university's decision to fully incorporate the problematic and controversial International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, or IHRA, definition of anti-Semitism into its new NDAH policy. They believe that decision is likely connected to the closed-door, sealed settlement to a lawsuit the school recently entered into. As a coalition of Israeli human rights organizations wrote last year, quote, "The Israeli government views and treats the IHRA definition as a coercive tactic and tool to silence dissent to its repressive policies vis-a-vis the Palestinians," end quote. And as Kenneth Stern, the lead drafter of what was then called the working definition of anti-Semitism, wrote in a Guardian opinion piece arguing against the IHRA definition's adoption by universities, quote, "It was never intended to be a campus hate speech code," end quote, and it, quote, "will harm not only Palestinian advocates, but also Jewish students and faculty and the academy itself," end quote. Once again, I want to thank our guest, former civil rights attorney, current writer, activist, and speaker, Stephen Rohde. I also want to thank Gary Baca for his production support today. Our theme song is The Overture from Summer Night's Dream by Marcel Khalife. For KPFK Los Angeles, I'm Esty Chandler, thanking you for taking this time to put the Middle East in focus.